morning. I'd like to thank the organizers for putting together such a stimulating program. I'm going to tell you, oops, this is the last. Before I start, I want to address a question that has been raised repeatedly at this conference, and that is the issue of that has to do with charge inhomogeneity. So when we do graphene on graphite, we find that the properties are by far the closest to intrinsic that one can see. Never, we see linear density of state that vanishes at the Dirac point. We see Landau levels that are sharp, and they follow a square dependence on field, and Landau level index with a level at the Dirac point. However, we still see charge inhomogeneity that whose spread is about 3 millivolt, and that is comparable to the best sample, to our best suspended samples. What we conclude from here is that the charge inhomogeneity is probably not due to charge impurities, but rather to something else. In addition, simultaneously with the charge inhomogeneity and quite correlated with it, we see a variation, a fluctuation of the Fermi velocity, and this kind of addresses the question that Maria raised yesterday. So let me start. In order to do STM, so graphene on graphite, we put graphene on a second layer of graphene that is twisted away from Bernal stacking, and that gives us Van Hoff singularities in the density of states, which are monotonic with angle, with the angle of rotation. We see a substantial slowdown of the Fermi velocity with decreasing angle, and at the smallest angle, at 1 degree, we see a localized charge density wave. Then we put graphene on chlorinated silicon oxide, which is slightly better than the standard silicon oxide, and there we're able to see Landau level simultaneously with the Fermi level, Fermi energy, and we can watch actually the Landau levels being filled. Finally, if I get to it, we see graphene on boron. We do graphene on boron nitride. There, like everybody else in transport, we get mobilities that are close to 100,000, so they look great. In topography, we see nice honeycomb structure. However, we are quite disappointed that the Landau levels don't look any better than they do on silicon oxide, and we still have strong fluctuations in charge density. So these are the intrinsic, these are the summary of the properties that one expects in intrinsic graphene that would be accessible with STM, and that's the linear density of state, which vanishes at the Dirac point, and this unusual sequence of Landau levels. Now, in order to see these things, you need an STM, which has a coarse motor that allows us to find, to explore large areas, and a fine motor that allows us to zoom in to atomic resolution. And finally, it's very nice to have a magnetic field, which allows us to see what happens to the density of states when we apply it perpendicular to it. And here is a standard sample, graphene on silicon oxide. This is a topography. It doesn't look very smooth. When you do spectroscopy, you see that there is a substantial filling in of low energy levels, and that is due to the electron hole puddles. And that covers a regime of anywhere between 50 to 100 millivolt, which basically hides the Dirac point physics from view. So therefore, we go to graphene on graphite, and we find, as other people did equally, is that it's a very nice substrate to work with. It is clean, it is lattice match, and especially it's nice for STM because it's a conductor. So these are results that one can see on graphite and topography. One can do large area topography, one can see nice edges and sometimes identify them. Triangular structure on graphite, grain boundaries. This is a graphene flake sitting on top of graphite, which I'm going to discuss soon. This is the honeycomb structure in this graphene flake. And here we see a moiré pattern when you have rotated layers. In spectroscopy, here we see this is the graphene flake on top of graphite, which is decoupled electronically from it. We see the density of state. This is the DIDV, which is proportional to the density of state. Linear vanishes at the Dirac point. And when we apply a magnetic field, we see the Landau levels pop up, and they're very sharp. We're going to study, for example, the Fermi velocity using these Landau levels. In contrast, when you get off of the decoupled flake, when you're coupled, you see a triangular structure, you see a density of state that's typical to graphite, and no Landau levels in the magnetic field. So the kind of physics that we can get out from these experiments is we're going to get at a Fermi velocity, we can measure the local doping and its variation along a sample, we can measure the local Fermi velocity, energy dependence of Fermi velocity, quasi-particle lifetime from the line widths of the Landau levels, and we can also measure the coupling to the substrate from the kind of sequence, Landau level sequence that we get. So here is our Landau level sequence, and you see the Landau levels fan out. We can plot the peaks. If you put the peaks and you plot them against this reduced parameter, you see a nice straight line from which you can extract the Fermi velocity. More importantly, this tells you that you have indeed masses Dirac fermions because they follow this dependence on field and Landau level index. Now, when you look at in zero field or even in finite field, the Fermi energy is here at zero, and the Dirac point is here. So you can just measure the difference, and that gives you the local charge density. And when we do that, for example, in this sample here, this is a map of the local charge density. We find that it's about 22 millivolts corresponding to whole doping, and there are local, as you can see, local variations in the charge density. And that, as I said, is comparable to what we measure in our best suspended graphene sample, as do other groups, Manchester and other groups. By comparison, the charge density fluctuation on silicon oxide is about an order of magnitude larger. Now, we can do the same thing for the Fermi velocity. We can measure Landau level sequences at every point and deduce the Fermi velocity. And here is a map of the Fermi velocities. And it's already clear just by looking at it that they correlate very well. The Fermi velocity that we get here, the variation is about 2% across the sample. This is data from this morning. Here I'm going along a line here, and I correlate the local charge density with the Fermi velocity, and it's pretty clear that as the charge density decreases, the Fermi velocity increases. Now, what this is due to is not clear. One expects an increase in the Fermi velocity at low charge densities when you're approaching the Dirac point due to electron-electron interactions. But as we heard yesterday from Maria, there are also effects that are due to local strains. And at this point, we don't know how to deconvolute the two. You can see. Now, we can see effects of electron-phonon coupling. And this we get only in our really best samples from the zero field density of states. We can find the renormalization of the Fermi velocity, which measures the electron phonon coupling, and we see right away that here at the energy that corresponds to this A1 prime phonon, we get a slowdown of the Fermi velocity. So we can say that we can identify this is the effect of electron phonon interactions. Now, when we increase the coupling to the substrate, when we don't have such clean sample, this completely goes away, and the velocity stays kind of flat. Similarly, now we can look at the Landau levels and we can plot the line width as a function of energy, and we see that it's linear. There is an offset here of a part that is independent of energy, and that gives us a lifetime of 0.7 picoseconds, which corresponds to a mean free path, which is roughly the size of the sample. So we deduce that if we could do transport on this, it would be ballistic. The linear part here gives us a lifetime that's inversely proportional to energy, 9 picosecond per millivolt, which is in the same ballpark as what was predicted theoretically by Maria and Paco in the 90s. We can also estimate the mobilities from these at the density, at the carrier density in the sample, and we get numbers that are completely consistent with what we see in suspended samples in transport experiments. Now, another nice thing that we can do from the Landau levels, here we have two regions here. In region one, the Landau levels look like this, and you see that they're pretty much homogeneous across the sample. When we cross this region, we have a new sequence that appears. And then we compare to theory, which calculates the Landau level position as a function of coupling to a substrate, T. So when you have completely decoupling, you see a single layer sequence, which is exactly what we see in this region here. When we have finite coupling, we have lifting of the layer degeneracy. In the limit of equilibrium coupling, which is about 400 millivolts, you recover the Landau levels for a bilayer. But here from the sequence, we can actually estimate the coupling between the layers. So in this region here, we are completely decoupled. In this region, the coupling is about a tenth of equilibrium coupling. So there are lots of things that one can do with this Landau level spectroscopy. It's a very powerful technique. The next topic is putting graphene with a twist. Here are our collaborators. Some of the measurements were done on CVD-grown graphene, which was suspended on a membrane like this. The CVD was grown in Jing Kong's group, and the suspension was done in the Manchester group. And now, when you have a Bernal stacking, the unit cell of graphene contains two atoms. However, when you rotate away, the unit cell grows. And the smaller the angle of rotation, the larger the unit cell. In the limit of very small angle of rotation, the unit cell is basically tends to infinity, which makes it very hard for theorists to calculate what's going on. So this is rough. This is how the periodicity goes with the angle of rotation. This is a very small portion of the people who actually worked on this. There's just no room to cite everybody else. So here's what we see. This is a rotated sample. When we zoom in here, this is a superstructure that is about 10 contains about a few hundred atoms for rotation of 1.79 degrees. You zoom into one of these dots, you see atomic resolution. You see an edge here between a rotated and unrotated regions. One can do spectroscopy, which gives us something, a proportional density of state. In the unrotated region, it's kind of, it doesn't look so nice as on graphite, but it is clearly looks like Dirac fermions. When you get into a rotated region, you see these peaks appear, which are pretty much the same across the entire rotated region. Now, what's going on? These are several angles of rotation. We're going from 1.2 to 20 degrees, and you see the periodicity of the superstructure keeps decreasing with increasing angle of rotation. At the same time, the spacing of these peaks, which are Van Hoff singularities, as you'll see in a moment, increases. So the spacing increases with the angle of rotation. Now, what is going on? The explanation, it's pretty easy to explain what's going on. If green is the bottom layer and red is the top layer, the Dirac cones will intersect not at zero energy, but at some finite energy. And when they intersect, and this is very important, If there is coupling between the layer, you're going to get hybridization of the bands here. Otherwise, you don't. They just go through each other. And the hybridization of these bands gives a saddle point, which in the density of state translates into Van Hoff singularity. So this is what's going on, and this is the, our theorist collaborators calculated what you expect, for example, for the spacing to be, for the density of state to be at a rotation of 1.79 degrees, and we have pretty good agreement with theory for all angles that we measure above 1.2 degrees. So here is, now we can also measure the Fermi velocity. So we see that at small angles, the Fermi velocity decreases. And for the data that we have, it fits the theoretical calculation of the reduction of Fermi velocity at low angles of rotation. This is pretty easy to understand because these bands become flatter and flatter as the two cones approach at small angles. Now the question mark here happens is, this is the place where the unit cell is huge, so you can no longer calculate things precisely. And experimentally, the two peaks merge, so we can no longer do Landau level spectroscopy and measure the Fermi velocity. And this is what we see there at the small angle, 1.2 degrees. You see at zero field, we have no longer two nice peaks. So they merge. As you increase the field, we start seeing something to do with Landau levels, but of course they're not the usual sequence. Another thing to note is that we have a very large inhomogeneity, so we have a much higher density of states on these regions than in the regions in between. So these are AA stacked, these are AV stacked, so this is a density of state map, so immediately you see that you have a charge density wave. Charge accumulates in one region and is depleted in the other. So it looks like really the Fermi velocity plops to zero and we have localization there. Next, I'm going to go to graphene on silicon oxide. And this is the experiment, this is the schematics of the experiment. In this experiment, we can do simultaneously STM and change the position of the Fermi energy. So let me just compare graphene on graphite. I've just shown you. We see this nice, beautiful, very sharp Landau levels. When you do it on standard silicon oxide, the density of states is clearly disturbed by the puddles. There are really no Landau levels to the highest field that we go. The sample is very inhomogeneous. There isn't much we can do with this. But then we found that, digging in the literature, we found that there is a better silicon oxide substrate. This is chlorinated. It's treating the silicon oxide by chlorination, chlorinated dry oxide. And we ordered a sample like this, and things looked better. Topography is not much different, neither does zero field density of state, but in finite field, above 6 Tesla, we start seeing identifiable Landau levels. And that gives us something to work with, and you see that kind of homogeneous across the sample. So we use these samples, and now we can plot Landau levels. These are the Landau levels as a function of gate voltage, and this is what the map looks like. This is a simulation that we have. Now, here is the Fermi energy is at zero here. Now, when I go from -30 gate to about zero, I'm filling the -1 Landau level. And you see that the Fermi energy is kind of pinned to this Landau level. It is not completely flat. This slope comes from the fact that Landau levels are not perfectly sharp. And we see that in our simulations as well. I continue to dope from 0 to 10. Now I'm jumping from the -1 to 0 Landau levels. I'm in the localized region, basically. And then I continue to dope now in n equals 0 level. And again, you see the pinning of the Fermi energy to the Landau level. And now I'm jumping in the gap in between the 0 and 1 levels. Another thing that we can do is we can look, theoretically one would expect that there is a delocalized state inside the Landau level, and in between the Landau level there should be localized state. And we can actually look at this. So when we sit in between the Landau levels, you see that most of the density of state is localized here in this impurity here, But when you go inside the Landau levels, you see that the wave function spreads out. We can actually make a nice movie out of this, you can see how this evolves as a function of the position of the Fermi energy with respect to the Landau levels. So it's a nice picture of what we all know has to go on. You get delocalized states in the Landau level. They become localized on impurities when you're in between. Another thing that we can do, because we can change both the Fermi energy as well as measure the Fermi velocity, we can look at what happens to the Fermi velocity as we get closer to the Dirac point. And this is what we were able to do. We are on silicon oxide still. It's not as great a suspended sample, so we were not able to get as close as the Manchester group. The Manchester group could get significantly closer and see an increase of a factor of 3. We see about 25% increase in the Fermi velocity upon approaching the Dirac point. And I was very happy to see that also the ARPES data that Alessandra showed shows this kind of renormalization. And finally, I'm going to tell you a little bit graphene on boron nitride. As I said, in transport, the samples look terrific. Huge mobilities, quantum Hall effect, integer quantum Hall effect. We haven't seen fractional yet. So here is a comparison of topography, silicon oxide, and HBN. On boron nitride, the sample is 10 times flatter, as everybody else sees, than on silicon oxide. Now, when we look at the density of states, and we can also see nice the honeycomb structure on it. When we do spectroscopy, it doesn't look that great. In fact, it's not any better and doesn't look any, the charge density fluctuations are not any smaller than on our chlorinated silicon oxide. This was the data that I was supposed to get this morning, but we have Landau levels. And we find that the velocity is 1.7 times 10 to the 8 for a density of 3 times 10 to the 11, which is pretty much what the ARPES, Alessandra Lanzara showed us a couple of days ago from ARPES. So we are able to see Landau levels. They're nowhere near as nice as on graphite. And we are able to extract the Fermi velocity, and we see the renormalization at low carrier densities. So this is all I wanted to tell you, and this is a summary. Let me just highlight all the STM work was done by Adina Lukan and Gohong Li, and these are the rest of the Rutgers group that work on transport. And here's a list of our collaborators, the Manchester group, the MIT group, our theory collaborators. Let me just quickly summarize. Graphene on graphite, by far the closest to intrinsic behavior of the Dirac fermions, linear density of states, Landau levels, but we see spatial fluctuations of the Fermi energy of about 2%. The Fermi velocity 2%, Fermi energy about 2-3 millivolts. In twisted graphene, we see more ray pattern, Van Hoff singularities that are monotonic in angle of twist. And at the smallest angle, we see quasi-particles slow down, basically localization. On the chlorinated silicon oxide, we can watch the Landau levels being filled and the Fermi energy pinned to the Landau levels. We can see extended and localized state and Fermi velocity renormalization. Graphene on boron nitride, the STM data spectroscopy is not any better at this point, at least in our samples, than what we see on chlorinated silicon oxide. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you both for the wonderful timing. We have plenty of time for questions.
Yeah, I was curious why the Fermi velocity in the graphene on graphite seems so much lower than the Fermi velocity measurements in the rest of your talk.
Actually, I went over that much too quickly. That is, That is due to the interaction with the A1 prime phonon. Let me go back to that. And it only it's a function of it only happens at low energy, below 150 millivolts, which is the A1 prime phonon. Okay, so here it is. So you see, this is the energy of the phonon here, 150 millivolts, and this is this A1 prime phonon. It's the one that is responsible for the D2 peak in the Raman. It has a cone anomaly, and it interacts strongly with electrons. It's basically this phonon here, the breathing phonon. And now you see, when you get away from the energy of the phonon, it goes back to the unrenormalized value. What is very interesting to us, that this is it's a fragile effect, and this was also shown theoretically by two groups, that when you get coupling to the next layer, the line width of the A1 prime phonon becomes much narrower, which means that the interaction with the electron is much weaker. And we see that in the region where we have coupling between graphene and the top layer and the lower layer, this goes away. It's much, much weaker. We have three times 10^10.
So for the same domain and similar sample, we actually see a Fermi velocity which is much higher than this one.
I know.
And we are doing with this Fermi velocity, which is actually the very you're setting for a high domain. So when you observe a lot, then you see the changes in the stronger color in the other.
So in the numbers, there is a discrepancy. In this, there is a discrepancy between RMS and STM, yes. So we don't know where it's coming from, yeah.
Okay, so I have two questions about the twisted bilayer. First, you were able to determine that the charge concentration was at the AA stacked regions, right?
Yes.
And it has the same...
Well, we are able to determine, but I don't remember which is which. Okay, so I don't want to commit.
Okay, and you determine this with...
But one is AA, the other is AB.
Okay.
But I don't remember which.
Okay. The second one is, do you have any hint of the magical angles predicted for the zeros in the velocity? McDonald's paper was saying that below 1 degree in twist angle, you would get rebounds in the velocity. Any hint of this?
Well, the only hint that we have is what I showed. Okay, so this is all we have. This is our smallest angle. And you see that in the bright area, this is density of state map, this is not topography. So in the bright regions, in zero of Tesla, we have the larger density in the low regions. For the other angles, the density of state maps are flat. So this really shows us that we have a charge density wave, right? But this is what we have. I mean, we cannot measure directly the Fermi velocity here. We can only say that we have a localized wave because we don't have Landau levels. So this is, if you go to other angles, it would be hard to do with this technique.
And you cannot control the angle.
We just go on a hunt. We have...
I want to come back to the difference in Fermi velocity and Landau level behavior that you were emphasizing between, let's say, boron nitride and graphene on graphite. So. Do you think that the difference can be related to screening of electron-electron interactions in the graphene sheet by the graphene substrate?
So that you mean the difference in what?
That the electron-electron interactions within the graphene sheet when it's on top of graphite are much weaker than in the other cases because the graphite is screening.
But we see...
The difference in Fermi velocity may be that The difference in, you know, the sharpness of Landau levels.
The difference in absolute value of the Fermi velocity is consistent with the difference in dielectric constant. And actually, this is it's consistent with what Alessandra showed. She showed this 1 over epsilon behavior of the Fermi velocity, and I think that is pretty consistent. But on top of that, so that would be for large doping. But when you're doping, when we decrease the doping, we cannot do it, of course, on graphite. But on silicon oxide and on the boron nitride, we can go to low doping and see how the Fermi velocity changes. However, there is in those fluctuations in the Fermi velocity across the sample, we correlate. That's actually a good point. We correlate the local density with the local Fermi velocity. This is this graph here. Okay, and you see at least a hint of that here, that, okay, so in red is the Fermi velocity, in black is the Dirac point energy, and this is a small portion of the data, but lower carrier density corresponds to higher Fermi velocity. So that is possibly it's due to that. But of course, as Maria pointed out, it could also be due to local variations in curvature, which we don't see directly, actually.
Eva, hi. I have a related question. Above your sample, you have this huge tip, metallic tip, which also produces screening. What its influence and whether it can explain your variation with the density, because I presume the distance to the graphene sheet also changes in your experiment. It's not a constant distance.
I think that's a very good point. We are worried about this a lot. So what we do is we take the data as a function of height, and we go far enough where we don't see a variation anymore. But then we sit at a fixed height, so if there are, you know, small height variation in the surface, that might cause local doping. We don't see that directly in the topography, but I can't rule that out.
I just would like to say that in all our experiments on graphene, on graphite, Fermi velocity is 10 to 6.
Is what?
It's 10 to 6.
I would just like to comment that when you put graphene on top of graphite, basically electrons in graphene are interacting with the 10 to the 23 electrons in graphite, which is a three-dimensional material. So the dimensionality of the Coulomb interaction is different. It's 1 over Q squared. So people have done ab initio calculations, and they saw substantial velocity renormalization around the H point of graphite, which is like Dirac-like. So it's not exactly the same problem as in suspended samples, not just because of the dielectric constant.
But this particular renormalization that we see is, we don't see it when we have coupling to the substrate. And it's at a particular energy. No, this is electron phono. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? The dip? Right. Right. So this is a general issue, yes. Nothing to do with the electron phono interaction. I agree. Yes.
Now we have the last question by Pablo.
So on your twisted bilayers, what Fermi velocity are you measuring? Because it's very anisotropic, right? You have on one side the point of singularity, but on the other side the cone is, you know, doesn't have another cone. So what value is very anisotropic in momentum
Fermi
space?
Velocity, at close to the Dirac point, let me show you. So we look at the Landau level. Actually, I have the data here. I have too much stuff.
But do both sides of the cone get flatter?
We don't look at a cone. We average over a surface.
So is it an average or is it?
Let me just show you that. Okay, this is what it looks like. Okay, this is what the band structure looks like. Right, and.
Is it extracted from the Landau level? The Fermi velocity, is it extracted from the Landau level?
Yeah.
It's an average.
Right, it's an average. And we, of course, the Landau levels are pretty good down here, but when you get up here, they get messed up. So that's why when we go to very small angles, that is no longer meaningful. So we extract it from here where we have a meaningful Landau level. So at 1 degree, these two guys are so close that we can no longer resolve Landau levels.
Thank you very much, Shiva. We are moving on to our last speaker of the first part of the session, which is Brian Leroy from the University of Arizona. He's going to tell us about STM of graphene on boron nitride.